Friends, we will now proceed to study these universal form-building processes as they are carried out by angels and nature spirits in the construction of the physical, etheric, and superphysical bodies of man. In both nature and man, it is found that the creative forces, agents, and methods are in general very much the same. Perhaps the most profound of all the profound truths contained within the esoteric teachings are those of the unity of the macrocosm, or great world, with the microcosm, or little world, in this case, individual man. Theosophy also teaches of the close similarity between the processes by which both universe and man become manifested and evolve. Man, as is in very truth, as the book of Genesis says, made or created in the image of God. Eliphas Levi, in his Clef de Mystère, the key of the mysteries, says, the mystery of the earthly and mortal man is after the mystery of the supernal and immortal one. The universe, as we have seen in the earlier studies together, is the manifestation of a supreme deific power, a ray of which, and this is most important, a ray of which is present as the inner spiritual self of every human being. Realization of this divine presence as the true human individuality, the real self behind the bodily veil, such realization leads to the further understanding that this dweller in the innermost of man is itself forever at one with the Supreme Lord, the eternal source of light and life and power. This idea is fundamental to Theosophy, and we find H.P. Blavatsky referring to this unity and similarity in her monumental work, The Secret Doctrine, in this case Volume 5, page 421 and 429 of the Adyar edition, in these words. She writes, to the learner who would study the esoteric sciences with their double object of proving man to be identical in spiritual and physical essence with both the absolute principle and with God in nature, and of demonstrating the presence in him of the same potential powers as exist in the creative forces in nature, to such a one, she means the learner, to such a one, a perfect knowledge of the correspondences between colors, sounds, and numbers is the first requisite. It is on the thorough knowledge and comprehension of the meaning and potency of these numbers in their various and multiform combinations and in their mutual correspondences with sounds or words and colors or rates of motion that the progress of a student in occultism depends. So you see, the Logos and man are not only one in essence, but all that is in the Logos, which includes the solar system, All this is innate in every human being. Their constitution is precisely similar, that is to say, sevenfold. Man as monad is also immanent within and transcendent beyond his field of manifestation, which consists of his seven principles or bodies. Furthermore, the creative power and processes by which a solar system comes into being also operate in human procreation and subsequent bodily development. Significant, therefore, is the statement that the proper study of mankind is man. The injunction of the mystery schools of old, "Man, know thyself," was wise, for when man truly knows himself, he knows all. The old Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu put it, "The universe is a man on a large scale." And I think we might be permitted to reverse that dictum and say that if the universe is a man on a large scale, then man is a universe on a small scale. So now let us proceed to apply these ideas to man himself, particularly the processes of the descent of the human ego into incarnation, and the procedures of prenatal life. Before this subject can be adequately presented, however, it is necessary to advance and to remember, in our case as students, certain theosophical teachings concerning the superphysical and spiritual nature of man. I expect you who are listening to me are familiar with these teachings, but let us just remind ourselves of them so that as I proceed, we will be together in thought. In theosophy, then, man is described as that being in whom highest spirit and lowest matter are united by intellect. This, as you see, makes of man a threefold being, a triplicity. Actually, as we are also taught, human constitution, spiritual, intellectual, and physical, is said to be at least sevenfold. At the present stage of human evolution, the seven bodies or principles of man, beginning with the most dense, are the physical body, the vehicle of awareness and action in the physical world, its etheric double, the connecting link between the inner and the outer man, and the container of the vital energy, or prana, received physically from the sun and superphysically from the spiritual sun, and then the emotional or astral body, the vehicle of desire, feeling, the mental body, vehicle of the formal mind, and the instrument for man of concrete thought, then the higher mental or causal body, vehicle at the level of abstract mind for the threefold spiritual self, and called by the Greeks the orgoides, we refer to it as the ego, and then the buddhic body, vehicle of spiritual intuitiveness, and highest and most spiritualized of all, the atmic body, vehicle of the spiritual will and manifestation of the pure spirit essence in man. Overshadowing and empowering the whole sevenfold man is the dweller in the innermost, the monad or the divine spark. Remembering this, let us now proceed to study the processes of descent into incarnation. And as we do so, we will be struck, I think, with a possible similarity between those human procedures and those which occur and which we've been studying together in the emanation of universes. For, as the macrocosmic creative process begins with the Word, as we've seen, so the microcosmic creation of the mental, astral, and later the etheric and physical bodies of man is initiated by the utterance of the egoic Word. At or near the time of conception, the physical permanent atom of the ego about to incarnate is attached by an angel to the twin cell then formed. I wonder if you have up to now studied this important subject of the permanent atoms, have you? If not, may I recommend Dr. Besant's wonderful book, A Study in Consciousness. Here I may briefly say, the permanent or seed atoms are single, ultimate atoms of the planes of will, wisdom, abstract intelligence, emotion, and physical matter. At the beginning of the descent of the monadic ray into the evolutionary field, these atoms are attached by an angel to the life thread or projected ray of the monad. Thus, man is granted a representation by the presence of an atom in the worlds of will, wisdom, intelligence, emotion, and physical activity. The monad itself, you will remember, is situated on the second plane from the highest, called Anupadaka, the parentless, and thus obtains communication with the planes below through the life thread, in Sanskrit sutratma, thread of life, the life thread on which the permanent atoms are thus strung. At the opening of each cycle of rebirth, the microcosmic word force, or egoic power, life, and consciousness, descends down the thread of life diagrammatically, connecting the causal body with the astral and physical, permanent, or seed atoms. This threefold stream of creative energy vibrates on frequencies expressive of the egoic ray or monadic classification, expressive also, of course, of the evolutionary standing, the qualities of character and consciousness which the monad ego has already developed, and to some extent the karma, both happy and unhappy in its outworking. So this emitted stream of power, life, and consciousness, which constitute the word of the ego, really is expressive of the egoic situation and innermost and outermost nature and degree of evolution. All these are represented as vibratory energies, or if you like, to keep the idea of the Logos doctrine, represented as sounds in the chord of the egoic world. These modify greatly the parental characteristics transmitted via the mental and astral bodies and the ovum, spermatozoon, and chromosomes and genes, so that in a well-developed, really powerful ego, the incoming spirit can modify greatly, as I've said, the transmitted characteristics from the parents and the ancestry. Do you see? The creative power thus projected, shall I say, originates microcosmically in the monad, or the one indivisible self of man, the integral spark within the parent flame. The word which is primarily uttered. This monadic word is in its turn a chord in the vast universal or macrocosmic verbum or logos or word by which universes are made. But what I am trying to explain is that a very similar procedure is followed, and the same power is used when man, as it were, creates or influences the formation of his mortal bodies when reincarnating. Now let us look at this a little more closely. The causal or egoic body, the permanent vehicle of the spiritual self of man, may be thought of as the microcosmic archetype. It is the vehicle for and expression of monadic creative power, tuned or colored by the products of past experience, both on its own plane and through successive personalities. Thus is constituted. Perhaps I ought to say thus in part, for this is a very complex matter. Thus in part, then, is constituted the microcosmic, the human word, which the ego in the causal body utters creatively to initiate a new descent into incarnation. This affects, of course, the permanent atoms on each of the form planes. These are awakened from the relatively static condition of inter-incarnation periods, and they then become the focus for and the transmitter onto the planes of emotion, mind, emotion, and flesh of the relayed word force. These permanent atoms may be thought of as centers of the magnetic fields then set up, and they attract the type of matter which is capable of response to the emitted wavelengths. This is especially the case as regards the preponderance of one or other of the primary rays in the monad, and the ego, and of the three corresponding gunas or attributes of matter. So you see that in the very substance of which our bodies are built, as also in every other particular, perfect justice is automatically meted out to every individual as regards the mental, emotional, and physical equipment with which life's journey is begun. You see, the matter which is attracted to the magnetic centers, which the permanent atoms, when vivified, set up, that matter can only be attracted which is in harmony with the emitted word force. And so it fits the reincarnating individual perfectly, do you see? And thus the very substance of which our bodies are built fits us exactly under a principle of selective wavelengths. Now let us follow on and see how the bodies themselves come to be built. This stage, immediately following conception, may perhaps be compared to that in macrocosmic processes at which the word has been uttered and has produced the archetype. You remember the divine idea, which is the everlasting model for all that the universe will ever produce and perfect. And so, I repeat, this stage, immediately following conception, may perhaps be compared to that in macrocosmic processes at which the word has produced the archetype. And through that, the magnetic centers with their fields, within and around which planets will later be formed. Just the same in man. The principles governing the formation of the mental, astral and physical bodies are exactly the same at the three levels. But in order to present as clear an account of the results of such observations as I have been able to make, the process of building the physical body must briefly be described. Remember, please, what I have said in earlier talks, won't you? All of these ideas are offered purely for consideration, like all theosophical teachings, and I can only present the ideas and the findings and the fruits of study and research as far as I have been able to harvest them. And they are rather peculiarly my own, though I hope they are true to theosophical fundamentals. They have, however, no authority at all. Now then, at the moment of germination, the physical permanent atom, as I have said, is attached by an angel to the newly formed twin cell. This presence of the permanent atom, vivified by the descending egoic creative energy, or microcosmic word force, this presence of the permanent atom bestows upon that twin-celled organism its ordered biological impetus, causes it in fact to grow according to the word. The creative energy, now emitted into and through the permanent atom and twin cell, is found to produce at least four results. Let me put them before you. Remember the position at which we have arrived. Conception has occurred. An angel has linked the physical permanent atom, and so of course all the others, and the ego itself, to that first twin cell. From that combination of ovum, spermatozoon, and permanent atom charged with egoic life force, a kind of triplicity, energy of a creative character, electromagnetic if you like, is radiated out into the etheric atmosphere, an air if you will. Here, then, are four of the results which follow. First, the establishment of a field or sphere of influence within which the building is to occur. This corresponds, as you will note perhaps, to the formation of the ring-pass knot of the solar system in macrocosmic creation. It represents the range of the emitted rays and serves to insulate an area against the intrusion of foreign vibrations and substances. A kind of sphere or ring pass knot is outlined, shall we say, in space, in this case, the ether. Second, the magnetization occurs, or the attunement of the matter within this field to the emitted word force. The play of creative energy brings surrounding matter into vibrational harmony with the individual about to incarnate. Then, third, and this is very strange and wonderful to watch, there is the production of a form. This form, in the etheric part of the physical world, this form might be regarded as the etheric mold. In fact, we so name it, the etheric mold into which the physical body will be built. Perhaps I'd better try and describe the etheric mold in some detail. Clairvoyantly examined, the prenatal etheric mold, which appears very soon after conception, resembles a baby body built of etheric matter, somewhat self-luminous, vibrating slightly, a living being, the etheric projection of the archetype as modified by the person's karma. Within the etheric mold, there is to be seen in terms of flowing energy or lines of force, each on its own wavelength, a sketch plan of the whole body. Can you visualize that at all, or is this too abstruse? Think of a miniature form, perhaps about 12 inches tall, in outline only, in etheric matter of a baby body, and within it, currents of energy showing the pathways and positions into which matter will be built to produce the different tissues and organs, each in their place, of the ultimate physical body. Every type of tissue to be represented, differing from other types because the energy of which it is an end product is itself on another frequency. So you see the bony structure, the muscular and vascular tissues, the nerves, the brain, and other substances are all represented in the etheric mold by currents of energy on specific frequencies. And this, I believe, is part of the answer from occult science to the mystery of generation and regeneration, and how from the germ of protoplasm from which all begins, an actual living body exactly resembling that of the parents, generation by generation, continues to be built. The play of the emitted vibrations on the free surrounding matter may possibly be the factor which causes atoms to enter into differing molecular combinations to produce the various types of tissue. The hair, the skin, the nails, the bones, flesh and blood, and so on. These molecules are attracted towards the lines of force within the etheric mold, and they settle, as it were, into their appropriate places in the growing body by virtue of sympathetic vibration or mutual resonance. Thus again, you see, every part of the physical body, in substance and in form, exactly fits the reincarnating ego. Karmic deficiencies, which are to work out in terms of malformation, weakness, and disease, or tendency to disease. These two, the karmic deficiencies caused by actions in former lives, these are represented in the mold by dissonances, discord, and even breaks in the particular lines of force along and according to which the tissues are to be built. If this generalization be at all accurate, then the whole body of man, as also the solar system, can be expressed in terms of frequency, each type of tissue and each organ having its own wavelength, its own note and color, these in their turn varying in states of health and of disease. In perfect health, of course, every part of the body is in tune, and the cord of the human body is perfectly harmonized, both in itself and with the egoic cord. In ill health, however, the opposite exists. There's a dissonance at some part or other. Some notes, meaning portions of the body, are out of tune. And the true art of healing, one assumes, is that of the restoration of rhythm. And now I've just time to describe the fourth of the effects of germination. It is the evocation of the Devic, or angels, builders of form, just as occurred, you will remember, in macrocosmic creation, when the great and mighty spirits before the throne, the archangels and their hosts, in their turn, assist the Logos in building the universe as a whole. Apparently, something very much the same occurs in the building of the body of man, and these angelic intelligences also assist. The class or order of these which is evoked is also decided by the law of mutual resonance. Thus, nature spirits of the building order in the immediate neighborhood, which are in vibrational attunement with the currents or notes in the egoic word force emitted by the reincarnated individual, such nature spirits attuned alone hear, so to say, and respond. They're drawn upon the scene. Arriving there, they enter into that sphere which was first formed, the sphere of influence, and there they find themselves in an atmosphere entirely congenial to them, because, of course, ruled by their own inherent cause. They then proceed instinctively to absorb into themselves, and therefore further to specialize, the free matter, after which they assist in its vibrationally governed deposit into the appropriate place in the growing structure of the body. Now, this all is very similar to the procedures in the building of the cosmos, as I have been saying. Since man is an epitome, as we've found, of the solar system, a microcosmic manifestation of the macrocosm, these close resemblances are to be found between the creative processes which I've just described and those by which a universe comes into being. In man, then, the microcosm and the macrocosm meet. This, you know, cannot truly be said of the angelic hosts. Why not? Well, because they do not normally possess etheric and physical bodies. Neither is it true of animals, who are without the three higher principles of will, wisdom, and abstract intelligence. They're not individualized yet, are they? But in man, the full possibilities of macrocosmic self-expression are contained. The purpose also of his existence is the unfolding from within him of his divine or macrocosmic powers. As this goes on, he will in his turn attain to the stature of the Logos of a solar system. This was promised him, you remember, by our Lord himself in the Gospel according to St. Matthew, Chapter 5, verse 48, where our Lord says, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." Actually, that is a faulty translation from the ancient Greek. We have the correct translation in the revised version, where our Lord actually says, "Ye shall be perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." So you see, in man, not only do macrocosm and microcosm meet, but the destiny of the monad of man is to become even as his Father which is in heaven, in his turn, if he accepts the office, the emanator of solar systems and all that they will ever contain. There, friends, for several reasons, I must draw to a close these studies, very much in outline, very partial, I fear, of the processes of the creation of universes and of men.